Welcome to the Emotional Curriculum with me, Dr. Sarah Taylor Whiteway. All of us have probably experienced that sense of feeling different at some point in our lives. And this is something that characterises early adolescence and fitting in at school. But how does this experience differ for children with autism? Today, we talk with Dr. Emma Williams, a lecturer in developmental psychology at the University of Surrey, about her research, which brings together studies that explore this sense of difference in autistic children and young people. We discuss what contributes to this sense of difference and how context contributes to the sense made of a certain situation. Emma, welcome to the Emotional Curriculum. It's great to have you on today. We're going to talk about your research, which is about the sense of fitting in autistic children and young people. But first, could you tell us a little bit about yourself?
I've been working in autism research for over 25 years now. And really, it started from when I was doing my PhD. I did some research on autistic children's play, particularly their early play. And it just started from there, really. Now, more recently, I've become interested in their experiences at school and issues around identity. I'm a lecturer in developmental psychology at the University of Surrey. So I kind of lecture in developmental issues to university undergraduates and master students as well.
So we're going to talk today specifically about a piece of work you did, which was a metasynthesis, which is a bringing together of lots of different pieces of research into this area of autism and fitting in. So why did you feel it was important to do this metasynthesis?
I think there was kind of a number of reasons why. One, in the last decade or so, there's been a global shift in education in the sense that there's a move towards increased inclusion. So that was one of the background issues. That's meant that now about three quarters of autistic pupils are included in mainstream settings. And I should say at this point that I am deliberately using autistic pupils rather than pupils with autism, because although I use pupils with autism in the article, which I did several years ago now, my more recent research has been working more with the autistic community themselves, and they've been feeding into the research, and that is their clear preference. They say autism is a part of them, it's not a separate from them. And so that's kind of the reason why I've moved towards that. So about three quarters roughly now are in mainstream education. So there's been that kind of key shift. I should say the metasynthesis is about autistic people's experiences in school. School is a really key time when young people are, you know, making sense of who they are. So what happens at school and their experiences at school lay a foundation for the rest of their lives in terms of their mental well-being and their self-esteem, as well as their academic education. So that's why it's really important to look at what's going on there. But also, research has highlighted that many pupils are struggling in those mainstream contexts. For example, they're at higher risk of being bullied, have more difficulties forming friendships. So often they feel quite isolated, higher risk of being excluded from school, a prevalence of anxiety and depression. So all sorts of reasons that kind of indicate it's probably important to look more closely at what's happening here.
So could you tell us a little bit more about this metasynthesis and the studies that you drew on for your own research?
There's both kind of quantitative research, which is kind of looking at things statistically, but also qualitative research, which is where the focus is on investigating people's experiences and how they're making sense of what's going on in their lives. And there was a growing number of those studies that were kind of telling us that, you know, a lot of people were struggling. But the issue with qualitative studies is they tend to be really small. Each study has only a small number of participants. For example, typical number might be 12, and they're focused on a very specific context. So the reason why I decided to do a meta-synthesis was I felt there was a need to bring this growing body of qualitative research together, synthesizing it all and sort of integrating findings from all of those studies that were telling us something about young people's experiences in schools, and just seeing if we could find the bigger picture of what's going on in those settings, the kind of patterns, and, you know, bringing a larger body of research together, there's increased credibility or increased power, if you like, to tell us about what's going on. And there's a greater ability to transfer that then to other settings, other pupils in different settings, to tell us more about what's going on.
So it is really that idea that a single study can tell us about the context in which it was done, and with a meta-synthesis we can start to try and find those patterns which will tell us more broadly about the behaviour?
I mean, although most of the studies were from mainstream settings, that was one of the things we found. And there are some studies from specialist settings, so you can bring studies that were done in different contexts together with different aged pupils as well. So some younger pupils, some older pupils in secondary. Again, there was a bit of a gap in primary, not so much research on younger pupils, much more research on secondary school pupils. So it kind of helps you identify the gaps as well in what we know. Most research involved boys and there was very little on girls. So again, that was a gap. So it kind of can tell you about what's going on and what we know so far and what we might need to know more about as well.
It's really interesting, those patterns, isn't it? And you mentioned girls with autism, and definitely that research has been picking up momentum, and I guess patterns are being discovered there.
That's right. And I think maybe realising that their experiences might be different in some quite key ways.
Your meta-synthesis did find some patterns in how autistic people view themselves as different. And in your study, there's a lovely visual. So I was wondering if you could talk us through this.
Okay, so a central finding was that a lot of people were kind of making sense of themselves as being different from other people's. And most were making sense of themselves as being different in a negative way. So comparing themselves unfavourably to other people's. So seeing themselves as less good in something, different ways to other people's, perhaps being abnormal or weird. That was quite a predominant theme. However, there was a smaller group of pupils who were making sense of that difference in a much more positive way. They might describe themselves as different, but say something like, yeah, I'm different, but I'm unique. You know, all the rest of you, they're all boring. They're all the same. I'm unique. I've got specific things to offer that other people don't have. And, you know, maybe autism's given me superpowers or certain abilities that other people don't have. So they framed that difference much more positively, but they were definitely in the minority. So that was a kind of a central find. There's overarching sort of theme of making sense of yourself as different, and predominantly that was different in a negative way.
And so you went on to explore what fed into that sense of difference and found out some quite interesting things about how this is interpreted on an individual level too.
There are three key things feeding into that sense of difference. And how you made sense of those things, I think that was important in informing whether you saw yourself favourably in relation to other pupils or not. So it's that sense making, how you're making sense of the kind of experiences in various areas that you're encountering, that's actually ends up informing that. I think there are all sorts of other influences as well that weren't necessarily researched, so they didn't feed into it, such as your parents, how they make sense of autism and how they frame it, that can be important. Discourses that people are exposed to on social media, etc. But the key things that we identified that were in the research article, whose findings we brought together, were difficulties and differences that were associated with autism itself. So things like social communicative differences or difficulties, for example, like difficulties in initiating, maintaining conversations, sensory differences that you might be bothered by certain stimuli and might even find them really painful to experience, which other people don't notice at all. That in itself can inform your sense of being different, because you are behaving or responding to something differently than other people. Also, relationships with peers, the nature of your relationships with peers and with teachers. You could have a pupil who finds a small set of friends, and they may feel that they, a sense of belonging, they found their tribe. You may get another pupil, though, that makes sense of that in quite a different way. They might have a few friends and not many, and make sense of that as, oh, I'm not very popular. I've got a few friends, but not many people like me. See what I mean? So it's not only what's happening, it's actually how you're interpreting that yourself. So there's relationships with peers and teachers. And the other thing is the actual environment of school itself. So schools can be often, particularly secondary schools, can be really big, chaotic environments, loud noises, certain lights. So they kind of can bring up sensory issues in that sense that certain pupils find very difficult to deal with. So it's all of those things kind of intermesh to inform how pupils are making sense of themselves.
It's really interesting how you talk about that sense making and how individuals might experience the same situation but interpret it differently, and some see their autism as a barrier to getting on and others see it as something that's just part of themselves that can be accepted more.
And clearly as well, there are differences in the actual experiences. So, you know, obviously there are pupils who are experiencing a lot of bullying who don't have any friends. So it's both that differences in experiences and also your sense making can change the outcome in terms of how you're thinking about yourself.
And you touched on earlier other things that might feed into that sense making, but do we have an idea of how that person is making sense of their experience?
I mean, we are sense-making beings. I think it's something we do all the time, and not always consciously, but I think sometimes people don't necessarily pay attention to it and what may be shaping it, because actually, if you do, it is perhaps an area in which you could intervene in terms of trying to shape it in more positive ways. Particularly from about 7 onwards, particularly, you start to make sense of yourself much more in relation to other people, and that informs your sort of self-esteem and mental well-being more. So when you're younger, say you want to wear a t-shirt, you might just say, oh, I like this t-shirt, I'm going to wear this t-shirt. Whereas as you get older, you might think more, well, I like this t-shirt, but will other people like this t-shirt? And their reactions are then might shape how you think about it and how you then feel about yourself. So it's that sense of you needing to fit in and be accepted, and that then in turn other people's reactions kind of feeding into how you're making sense of yourself, just as you get older becomes more significant. But then again, as you get older, so later on in teenage, I think you start again to recapture all your own individuality, and so there, I think it's just a very crucial time for self-identity, particularly from sort of 7 through to kind of perhaps mid-teenage.
And I guess some of the difficulties inherent in autism are contributing to this. We often hear about how autistic people may be hypervigilant to what others are thinking of them in the moment because of those difficulties interpreting how they might be thinking. And maybe there's heightened anxiety about what other people may be interpreting in this situation.
I think that's right. I think some of them feel, well, something's going on and I'm not quite getting it. That can make it much more difficult to navigate that kind of sense making and those kind of experiences. Mm-hmm. And they might find that they come to school in something that other people sort of think, well, that's really odd to wear that, and not really realize until they're starting to see other people's reactions. And so picking up those kind of nuances, and I think, you know, obviously social relations get more sophisticated and nuanced, and yes, that might be an area of difficulty in terms of picking up those kind of messages. I think we found with the girl, sometimes they can over-empathise and be too affected by other people's feelings and what they say, even more than, you know, more than other pupils. It's kind of can be quite a complex picture.
And you mentioned girls with autism there, and one of the things that's talked about a lot with autistic girls is this sense of masking. And I wonder how much some of these things that you're talking about, these young people are saying they feel, maybe are hidden from those around them, and it's difficult to tell that they're actually feeling like this because of that desire to mask.
Yes, it's not like these thoughts and sense making is kind of visible on the outside. It's not like these pupils are walking set of symptoms. I think the problem is if you say autism, people think, oh, diagnosis, certain characteristics. And then you kind of almost expect to see those visibly in every pupil. And that just isn't how it is. It's a very varied in terms of how it manifests. But I think context can impact a lot on whether certain things are visible or not, as well as the extent to which the pupil might be hiding or masking those characteristics that they think might not be looked favourably by other people and might mark them out as different. So they are deliberately attempting to blend in and hide anything they think that might make them stand out or that other people might think might identify them as autistic, which in itself can be a huge anxiety, constant vigilance to kind of hide those aspects. But there is the issue of context as well. I think so it might be that in school, a pupil appears a perfect pupil and they might be just a quiet, conscientious, maybe a bit anxious, perfectionist in terms of their work. They might do extremely high quality work. And as far as a teacher's concerned, that's great. But actually they're kind of hiding a great deal of anxiety. And then maybe when they get home, that really comes out and there's difficulties at home and they have meltdowns. And so a parent might report, oh, my child is really struggling. And then it can be hard for kind of teachers to say, well, I don't see anything. They seem absolutely fine. There's no issues. And I think it's that lack of understanding that characteristics can appear and disappear according to the context. As well, at school, certain things might be difficult. Like there might be a certain light in the classroom that a pupil just can't really tolerate. That it maybe gives them headaches or makes them feel sick, which other pupils don't even notice. And at home, there might have been an adaptation to that because they might, in their room, they might have sort of orange light. So then those anxieties are kind of taken away. It's quite interesting because we did some work with autistic girls before lockdown and after lockdown. We had an interview with a pupil who said, I actually didn't realize how much the school environment was causing my anxiety until I didn't have to go to school. And so I wasn't subject to some of those things that were kind of causing that anxiety. So it's things appear and disappear as, you know, changing context, as well as how much an individual might be choosing to mask certain things. So I think it can be really difficult, you know, for teachers to spot issues when there are those kind of different factors going on.
It's really interesting that point you make about pre and post lockdown and how maybe autistic people have been tolerating this environment and then not having to be in it makes them realise how difficult and stressful it's actually been for them.
Exactly. I think that's causing some difficulties for some pupils for return to school, you know, to...
And as you've been talking, I've really been thinking about how important it sounds like it is to get the perspective of the autistic young person. What sense are they making from their experiences? So have you thought about the implications for schools and how schools can use what you found to support young people in them?
In our recent research, we looked at experiences of pupils in specialist settings and mainstream settings. And this is with girls more recently. We have found that there is sort of higher self-esteem among the girls in the specialist settings. And I'm not saying that to say, oh, we need to kind of move back to specialist settings necessarily. But I think we need to pay more attention to what's happening in specialist settings that might be really helping pupils to maintain a certain level of self-esteem. Then conversely, what might be happening in mainstream settings that might be putting them at risk of lower self-esteem and lower kind of mental well-being. Obviously in specialist settings, one thing is they have more space to perhaps look at some of these things in terms of supporting pupils' self-esteem. So I think that's an issue. When there's a total focus on academic, those things I think are really important for building young people's resilience really and increasing their mental well-being. So I think just that emphasis on strengths, everybody's got strengths, so let's find your strengths, support weaknesses or difficulties, but really emphasize those strengths. Because I think a lot of the girls in the specialist settings were just talking much more positively about autism in terms of what it can give them, you know, the unique things it can give them. And they had often said things like, oh, yes, I'm different, but everybody's different. That sense of neurodiversity generally, rather than that we're in the minority group and it's a less favoured group. So I think that, and I think that the fact that, you know, that you get groups, pupils together who can talk to each other about their experiences, form their own tribe, that so then they don't have that sense of being like an individual who's just sort of different, but that there are other people who share similar experiences and they can form friendships through doing that. I mean, we were working using creative art workshops where the girls kind of got together in groups to do various activities, and they did form friendships through that. You would sometimes have a pupil in that group who was very positive about autism and themselves, and that did kind of help other pupils. Potentially it can be a positive identity. So I think just things like that, making that space and really seeing that as really important to, you know, young people going forward, building that sense of self-esteem and, you know, focusing on their mental well-being and listening to them and letting them talk to each other about their experiences. The project we've been doing with the girls is funded by the Arts and Humanities Research Council. It's called Playing a Part.
And what you said earlier about masking seems really important here, that just because the school sees to think they're doing okay, they look okay, doesn't mean actually that they might not be really struggling inside. And so again, it's thinking about how do you access that? How do you help them share their experiences with you?
I think that's right. Not feel they have to hold on to it. You know, yeah, giving them an opening to actually say any difficulties. I mean, for example, in terms of sensory experiences, you know, once you know someone's struggling or maybe then they get a diagnosis, you could sit down and do a kind of a profile and ask them about, is there anything in school which is difficult? Because often things can be adapted without too much difficulty. Sometimes it's not that big a changes that need to be made. It's just about prepared to listen and find out and then, you know, seeing what adaptations can be made.
So lots of really interesting things have come out of our discussion today. And for people listening who are working with autistic young people in their schools, if there was just one thing you wanted them to take away from our conversation today, what would that be?
I think it is about realising that we all are sense-making beings and actually really finding out and asking pupils about what's going on for them and kind of enabling that conversation. And particularly pupils that are struggling, not just autistic pupils, but perhaps pupils who are struggling to fit in, to create a space in which they can do things together and perhaps form bonds with each other. So I think it's being open to finding out what's going on for those individuals and being open as well, like if parents say that their sons or daughters are struggling, to actually investigate that. Yeah, not assume just because they're doing really well at school that there aren't any issues.
Emma, thank you so much. Lots to think about there. And thank you for listening. If you'd like to find out more about the work Emma spoke about in the discussion today, you can find the links in the podcast description. If you like this episode, then please do subscribe, and you can follow us on Twitter at emcurriculum. You can email us on theemotionalcurriculum@gmail.com. See you soon.